Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
All right, welcome everyone to another show. Coming up today, we tried to get serious. Didn't work. However, who in the NHL just walked away from $17 million? The league is floating plans about saving the season. And players think it'll be the toughest cup ever. Some of the fallout from COVID-19 has more than a few fans saying they won't attend games even after it's back to normal. What's up with that? Some thoughts on expansion. Oh, and get this. Shocker, as Russ would say. He had a summer job one time. And not sure about how he's passing the time. This is kind of weird. And I got drunk in the hospital the night I got my appendix taken out. Like I got drunk after. That and much, much more coming up on today's show.
La, 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 la.
Do that again, Rusty. We're off and running. Let me hear you singing.
No, huh? God, no. God, we'll lose all 8 listeners.
Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you. And Russ Cortland with another episode of The Suspendables. So much stuff to talk about, Rusty. You're still in LA. I know you're isolating. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me off the show, you now are doing a puzzle? What?
Oh, my God. So Paris got, she got 7 puzzles from a friend. Like, you know, like we need something to do. So
right. Like real puzzles? Like the
yeah, like the one they got out right now is 1,500 pieces. Oh, and it looks like the gay pride parade puked on it on the table. And they're circles. And it's like crack cocaine for an addict walking by. You know, you walk by and you go, oh, you sit down, and like an hour and a half later, you're still sitting in front of a freaking puzzle.
That's funny.
On number 2 of 7.
Of 7 puzzles. Wow. Oh, yeah. I never would have thought about that. I couldn't think of anything more fucking boring than doing a puzzle.
No kidding. Well, the golf course is closed.
Yeah, that's shut down. Bunch of stuff is shut down. How's your week been then?
I can only smoke so many cigars and drink so much wine in one day. I got to do something else.
No, you can do better. You can do more. You think you're at your limit, but no. Okay, you keep piling it on, dude.
Oh,
okay?
God.
We got the White Claws going. I'm painting my house, Russ. It's been upside down. I thought I was a good painter. And then I had a buddy of mine come over and have a look who's a professional painter. And what took me a week and a half, Russ, okay, to paint my, okay? Yeah. A week and a half of fucking trim and all this shit and cutting in. And the guy came in here and handled twice as much work that I had left in an hour and a half. You ever seen a good painter go? Holy Jesus, are they
it's
good.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's unreal. So I've been doing that. And bunch of stuff to talk about on the show today. One is people are starting to weigh in, Rusty, with... Before we do that, though. Sorry. Before we do that, we started doing shout-outs. And I've got a friend of mine who's been a rabid listener to this show, who lives in Toronto. Jed Dixon is his name. Mm-hmm. And we met way back in university days. And I love Jed. He's a 2-time... cancer survivor.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's battled through it. But he was my most insane friend that I had growing up.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
No, he was off the fucking charts. Okay. Oh. He wanted to be an actor, which he ended up doing some acting and primarily voice work. But he did a couple of things. He used to get into acting, Russ, okay? He was, so if you wanted to be like Clint Eastwood, for example, we went to Carleton University. He got a Clint Eastwood poncho and a hat and a fucking cigar and all that stuff. You could smoke inside. And he'd dress up like that and he'd go to school like that for a month.
Method acting.
Method, yeah. And then he'd wear his Star Trek outfit. And but he was fucking hilarious, okay? He was, you know...
Hopefully didn't get any gay parts.
No, that's that'd be tough. Yeah, that
tough that on be, you.
Yeah.
Jim, it's all for the... Hey, I'm just method acting. Just turn over for, you know... Come on.
Stop it! What
come
the?
On, Jimmy. Take one for the team.
What is wrong with you? We're going to lose our approval here. Huh? Anyway.
Oh...
If I was Russ, I'd be a giver, not a receiver. Okay,
oh,
if
God.
I was. Okay. Anyway, the guy was hilarious. He ended up being what they called a TA, a tutorial advisor, when you had big lectures, you know, of 300 people, you took economics or whatever. And then you'd break off once a week into groups of 20. And back in those days, Russ, you could smoke in classrooms and stuff. You know, I went to school in the fucking early 80s. But there'd always be this kind of vote at the beginning of the year. Should we allow smoking in this tutorial thing? And people, some would say yes, and of course I did. But he was so funny. He would, the first TA class he had at the beginning of the year, the class came in, and they sat down. He says, okay, we got to throw this out to a vote. And as he was telling this whole thing, he would be pretending he's carving up lines of cocaine, saying, should we be allowed to smoke in here? Killer funny. And... But his best was, Russ, I had an appendicitis. I had an attack when I was in university. I had to have my appendix ripped out. And I was in the hospital for a few days. And it was right at exam time. And I was not a strong student, Rusty, right? And I made up lies to, you know, I pretended my grandmother was dead so I didn't have to write an exam and all this shit. And so when I had the appendix, I got to defer my exams, you know, because... Mm-hmm. Well, I was sick, right? Yeah. Doctor's note. Fuck, I had a surgeon's note, right, for this thing. And so then I got wind, Russ, that if you don't have after you have surgery, they don't let you go until you have a bowel movement, apparently. You have to. Otherwise, they'll make sure everything's working. Well, when I got wind of that and they were whipping me on Demerol every night, Russ, they came away. I had my ass so high in the air when that cart was coming around, Russ. Give me the Demerol, baby. Jack me up. I faked not having a bowel movement for 3 days, which I thought was brilliant, so I could get whacked on this Demerol every night and thinking, I'll ride this out for a week, Russ. You know me, right? Until backfired, though, Russ.
Uh-oh.
Backfired. I thought, yeah, here I am again. I haven't taken a shit yet. You better jack me up with the Demerol. And the girl came in with a different cart saying, not a problem. Roll over. We're going to give you a massive enema.
Oh!
Anyway, so that was stupid. But I was in, so I'm in my bed one night, and Jed, my buddy Jed, wanted to come and visit me, but he wasn't allowed. So I'm not lying, Rusty. He got a hold of some scrubs, like doctor scrubs, pants, yeah. and a jersey and a mask. And he had the little hat on that they wear, like he just walked out of the operating room. And I'm lying on my back, and I'm whacked out of my mind, and you can't really sit up, right? Because for the incision, right? And you don't laugh. You've probably been hurt with ribs and shit. You can hardly breathe. Anyway, I'm lying on my back, and I hear the doctor come in. I can't look, and the clipboard was hanging at the end of my bed, and I hear the guy pick up the clipboard, and then he just goes like this, Jimmy, 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 right? And fuck, it was my buddy Jed, snuck into the hospital, and then he wrapped the curtain closed around the room and pulled out a giant fucking bottle of Grand Marnier.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I love Jed. He's a huge listener to the show, and he's telling everybody about it.
Attaboy, Jed.
Yeah, Jed's my boy. And
is he retired like you are, or is he still going strong?
Well, he's going to do voice work. He's going to do some voice work.
No, I mean drinking, idiot.
Oh, no, he's probably plowing him back still. Yeah, Jimmy was a strong drinker.
So he hasn't hit the finish line like you
did. He hasn't run out of beer tickets yet. He's got a whole roll. Anyway, God bless him, and thanks, Jed, for listening. And glad you're recovering from your second bout. So you got some shout-outs. What's this? You keep fucking asking me about this. No swearing today, Russ.
Yeah, okay,
no
swearing. You're up to about four, but keep going.
Well... You know what? I swear every time you have a white claw. Okay, how about that? What's the story? Tell me about The Canadian Kitchen Party?
Oh, so last Wednesday, the great Canadian Kitchen Party, used to be called Gold Medal Plates. They support athletes, music programs, and the culinary. So those three pillars. And it's just a fabulous event that happens in 10 cities across Canada. And they started this on Facebook for 1 hour. They have all these Canadian musicians come on and perform. And they're calling it Takeout Wednesday. So they're asking all the listeners to order in food from the restaurants to support them.
Right.
Their local favorite place or... And sit around and listen to this one-hour show, and it was just great. And they're doing it two more Wednesdays, so this week and the next week, and you'll get to hear all kind, you know, the Canada's great musicians and personalities. It's fabulous. So we sat around last Wednesday, had takeout, and down here in LA, and. Listen to Barney Bentall and Jim Cuddy and Ed Robertson and
oh, cool!
Yeah, you look it up on Facebook. It's so I'm involved in that.
Good for you,
thanks,
Russ. If people don't know that about you, because we don't talk about it too much, but you are a giving guy and you've given back your whole life. Your shout-outs, Russ, are a lot more impactful than mine. I'm like, here's Jed, a guy I used to get hammered with and tried to stoop broads, and we smoked weed and drank our head off. Russ, how about your shout-out? Yeah, Jim, I'm raising millions of dollars to help. And another guy, who's your buddy in Victoria, Russ? He's over in London now, I think.
Jeremy Petzing's an old friend, and he owns the local in Victoria, and rugby player, very well connected in the inner city and great golfer. And his brother flies for an airline, British Airways, lives in London. And their dad was the, you introduced him, the captain of the golf tournament at golf course.
Oh, right, yeah.
Major.
The British guy. Yeah, the major.
Major
right.
Petzing, who's passed. But anyway, Zinger has a great bar called Local. And he's like, do you have this podcast? I heard you got a podcast, The Suspendables. And then he's been listening. And anyway, Zinger's a good man. And he's going through this right now, too, with the, you know, all they can do is takeout. So he's got an Instagram and he's serving up meals and just trying to keep people working and keep the doors open, obviously, or, you know, keep the business going while it's shut down.
There's so many things that are going on with people to help. Some good, some I want to talk about another one that I don't think worked last night. I didn't see it, but you guys did. But I know my gang up in Sudbury, my hometown, Jeff Huskin, all the boys who listen, and Vince Palladino and all these guys who are listening to our show. Jeff started this move on Facebook to say you got to order in on Friday nights to support the local restaurants because they're shutting down, right?
Right.
So shout out to those guys. The other thing is, we may be in trouble, Russ, with our podcast. Yeah, it may be. I hope we can survive. We've done 40. This is our 46th show, and they're great. Thanks to everyone for listening and the emails now and the Twitter posts that people are weighing in on they're great. They love it. However, Russ. Here's the problem that we may have. We may lose our jobs because we did a show last week with Kelly Chase. It was supposed to be a half hour, it went 90 minutes. And fucking everybody, everyone is saying, that's the best show ever.
I know. Yeah, it's one of those you get compliments, right, about the show. And then the best show ever because Chaser was on.
And the other killer is you'll go like this, or, you know, a nice one will be, hey, I just tuned in. I found out about the Suspendables and I tuned in. And the first one I heard was this Kelly Chase. That's unbelievable. What a show. That's fine. Okay. Now you're getting guys who are going, I haven't missed a show. I listened to all of them twice. So I've listened to 90 shows. The best one ever is Kelly Chase. You mean where Russ and I never said a word?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I sat on the coach. If Reg asks either one of us,
the coach,
for Kelly's cell number, we're screwed.
Yeah, we're in big trouble. So anyway, he is a smash hit. He's hilarious. Yeah. So you can go back and listen to that.
So Greg Stark is a Canadian boy who's done very well. He listens to our show, and we're on this group text, which is just hilarious, from Gosser.
Right.
And he lives in Seattle, Scottsdale, and Gosser. That's kind of his rotation. And he said that on our group text. He's like, "Boys, I know you're all of you on the loop in this text. If you haven't already listened to the Suspendables, the last one was classic." So that's Greg Stark. Thank you. And he's like your buddy. He's a survivor too.
Yeah, way to go, Greg. All right, buddy. Craig or Greg?
Greg Stark.
Greg Stark. And listen, don't think for a second. I don't care who you are. If you work in this business, you love the compliments. You love them. So pour them on. We really get a kick out of them. The best star, we read his letter a couple weeks ago, but I've seen a few more since, that people are listening to the show, and a couple of them do it during their chemotherapy treatments.
Ooh.
Where they throw their, you know, my ex-wife went through it, and you got to go in there for an hour and get the chemo done, and they got their earbuds in. And most of them are saying, the nurses are looking at me like I'm fucking insane. They want to send me to the psych ward because I'm laughing my head off. So we love all that. Rusty, the deal last night on TV with all the old bands, Elton John, Rolling Stones.
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga. What was the deal? They're doing a bunch. Have they raised $50 million? But I heard it was shit.
Yeah, well, they were all in their homes. You know, and they use their, I guess their iPhones or whatever. I didn't watch the entire show because I love charity and I love the fact they're raising money for the World Health Organization. But it was okay.
Well, I heard Elton John was, but really bad.
I don't want to rip Elton in case he's listening to our show. You know, he's a huge sports fan.
He might tune in now when you said the gay pride parade. You know, he's gay. He may like that. But
yeah, and he's a huge sportsman.
Listen, Rusty, all these old bands. Uh-huh. Okay, Elton's ageless. The most impressive thing about Elton John, he's been doing this for 60 years, man. Okay, mm-hmm. And people still listen to his music. Like bands like, you'd remember these, like Supertramp, Styx, Loverboy, you know, for Canadian, and a bunch of other ones, Boston. So these guys were big in the 70s and 80s, and they were, you know, the following they had, and they've sold millions of albums. But they're no good anymore, and now they're coming back, trying to come back. You know, the lead singer's 100, and they're trying to work. But it's all about the dough.
The music industry totally changed with the iTunes. So what happened was they used to make a... you'd make money from the album sales, and the concert would promote the album.
Sure.
And now it's flip-flop. They make money on the tours, not on the albums.
Right.
And so these guys, the only way they they can make money is by touring. And I know firsthand that Paris, my wife gets royalties from Sarah Vaughan, her mom. And the royalties,
really?
Oh yeah, the royalties have gone, they're like a fifth of what they used to be. And so, you know, if she was alive, she'd be playing in Vegas and playing all over the place. And that's why these guys they're playing, because it's the only way they can make money.
Can I ask, Sarah Vaughan died when? Like in...
1990.
And if you don't know who Sarah Vaughan was, she was like the... iconic jazz vocalist. Been with everyone. I know your Paris said when she grew up, Sarah Vaughan's her mother, she grew up, I mean, the likes of Sammy Davis and the Rat Pack were showing up at her house. Eh?
Yeah.
What's a royalty, Russ? What's a royalty?
Well, you get a piece of the...
No, I understand that. What is it? How much?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you. You got to ask Paris next time she's on the... if you get her on.
You're riding the fucking gravy train. You're riding the gravy train. Anyway, Hang them up, boys, if you're one of these old bands trying to sing, okay? Stop. Now, I understand saying that. I used to think Jagger couldn't sing anymore, and someone said he was fantastic.
Oh, he was great, and his drummer, I might have had...
Charlie,
I might have had a couple by the time the show came on last night.
Yeah, okay.
As
you say, shocker.
Yeah, and everybody put your surprise face on. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm focused on Mick. And Paris goes, look at the drummer. He's air drumming.
And I look, and this guy, he's
just sitting there playing to the air. Oh, my God. It was so funny. That's when I left the room and opened another bottle of wine.
Exactly. The last holdout ever has got to be Keith Richards, right? This guy never stopped drinking, and I saw a thing of him on a balcony the other day.
Oh, I sent that to you.
Yeah, he looks about, I don't know, 210 years old.
Right? This great picture that's going around of Keith Richards on his balcony with a drink in his hand, of course, and his shirt off, and he's got this puzzled look, and it says, where the fuck did everybody go? Oh, there's some good stuff going around right now. Oh, my God. I know you want to talk about the email, but Mike Shanahan Jr., his family used to own the St. Louis Blues. He's a good friend, listens to every show. He's in St. Louis. And he said about the Kelly Chase interview, he goes, yeah, it was Kelly telling stories and Russ drinking White Claws for an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Anyway, our email address, we'd love to hear from you, is the... Suspendables@yahoo.com. That's thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Facebook now. And we got a great guy looking after the Facebook page, Dave, who does some wonderful stuff up there. So check out the Suspendables on Facebook. And again, the email, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Rusty, a couple things here we got to get to about hockey. People are starting to talk about sports coming back now, including the great one, weighed in, assuming that the playoffs are going to happen for this year. Most of it's driven by money because apparently the dollar figure is something like $1 billion it's going to cost. I'm not making that up.
A loss if they don't play?
Yeah, I guess all toll, I guess, the domino effect of it. Maybe not. Maybe it's the direct money, but $1 billion. So they're going to do their level best here, Russ, to fix the playoffs.
Yeah.
So how's that going to go, right? Everyone's wondering, how are you going to do it? Pacioretty in Vegas weighed in on this thing saying, if they do, he believes it will be the toughest Stanley Cup to win of any Stanley Cup. And his main reasons were, well, it's going to bring in a bunch of teams who were perhaps injured, not as fit, with older guys and stuff like that. So they're going to have a chance to, get in shape for it. Mm-hmm. Larry Brooks, the iconic writer, he's saying it might be a 2014 format. So what's your take on hockey and playoffs and how we're going to pick it up again?
Well, I think they were talking about the teams that were close to making the playoffs, that were in the run. They're going to let them have a one-game playoff to see who gets to go. So they might eliminate those teams that were on the fringe and then get down to 16 pretty quick.
Right.
So if they did that, I think it's kind of fair. I don't know if one game is fair. I think it should be maybe best of three. And so if they had a best of three, let those teams eliminate to get down to 16, then start the playoffs. But I think the odd thing will be if there's nobody in the stands. I don't know how they're going to, can they black out the audience so you're just focusing on the players or what. But never have we ever paid attention to the fan base because all the playoff games are sold out. There's always fans there. So you're focused on the game. You're never focused on the fans. And now they're talking, about fans. They're talking about this. They're talking about that, which it's all going to be very interesting. If they can do it and we get a winner, great. And if we can do it and have some fans in there, even better. But
right,
I hope that we can, just because I want this thing to, you know, for all of us to get better and mm-hmm. move on. And if we have fans there, that means we've got a reason, you know, a health reason that we're allowed to be there. That meaning they have a vaccine or something.
Right. Russ, the Phoenix Coyotes, when they came in, they couldn't draw shit. They couldn't draw flies. And they're all of a sudden developed this debate between players and fans. And it is an example of the chicken or the egg. And I want to know what side you fall on, because the players started saying, after the fans reacted, saying, well, if you could ice a team, win a game or two, and we'll show up. And the fans and the hockey players said, how about you show up? Right? And how about you guys fill the seats a little bit to give us something to play for? And it went back and forth like that for a while. And then they got in financial trouble. But what's your take on that, Russ? What's the obligation of the fan here? You don't do a 10 games if your team's shit.
There's no obligation. And I played the last year the Minnesota North Stars were in Minneapolis. And the fans were pissed that we were leaving, and they barely showed up the last half of the season. We had 4,500 to 6,000. In fact, I've told this story before. Shane Cherla, our tough guy and great guy, was sitting on the bench, and across from our bench in a section, this fan was all by himself, and he yelled across the ice, "Hey, Charles, where do you want to meet after the game for a beer?" And he just put his head down, shaking his head. He could hear him perfectly, and so did Bob Gainey, our coach. But so it's no fun. I've played in some great cities, and they were, for the most part, always full, and the seats were all full. And as a hockey player, as an athlete, a pro athlete, you're a performer, and you want to go out and play in front of your audience, and even on the road, it's fun. And it's no fun playing in and you go into these buildings where they were dying. Pittsburgh, before Mary Lemieux, they'd get 4,500 people. LA, before Gretz showed up, it was dead. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. I mean, you go out there and, you know, you can hear people talking in the stands. Hey, would you mind shutting up over there? We're trying to play a game
here. You bring that up because baseball has started up again over in Asia, in China. And the first game they had, they ended up, so there's no fans. Mm-hmm. They ended up having a bench-clearing brawl, which, of course, blows apart the whole safe distance thing.
Wow.
But what they did, Russ, is they didn't want the stadium to appear empty on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So they put cardboard cutouts in the seat.
No.
Not only that, Russ, and so I saw a picture of it, and they also put blow-up dolls in a bunch of the seats. And I was looking at it, and I said, I recognize two of those. Russ, when you, one of our emails here, again, the suspendables at yahoo.com, someone asked, if you had to pick, would you rather have played, and you played in both cities, what was your favorite, Montreal or Toronto?
Oh, they're both great. And I was a Leaf fan growing up. My favorite player was Boris Salming. I get drafted to the Leafs. I mean, it's a dream come true. But to have the opportunity to go play for the Montreal Canadiens and live in that city, play in front of those fans, it was spectacular. And, you know, my last year there was not good. I was signed to a big contract at the time, and then I got injured, and the media piled on me. Pat Burns piled on me. It was brutal. So I asked to be traded, and that was not a good move by any means. But both are just fantastic. It was unbelievable, and we were so good in Montreal. We were a young team in Toronto. We had a little bit of success in the playoffs, but nothing like when I played Montreal, where we were really a good team, and it was fun playing.
Right. Okay, you have to pick one or the other, though. Come on.
No, I'm not going to, because they're both great. I mean, I was a, you know, growing up as a Leaf fan and getting drafted by the Leafs, it was phenomenal.
Whatever. Once you're Toronto.
Yeah.
You were saying in the last show, and I didn't have a chance to ask you about it. I made a note here to talk to you about it today. You were on a fourth line, Russ, with 1 year, and you guys got 70 goals? Something like that?
I was on the fourth line. I played with Guy Carboneau and Mike McPhee, and we were the checking line on the team, so we played against the other team's best line every night. And I had 20, probably like high 20s. Carbo and Mike both had, they were in the low 20s.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, well, Guy Carboneau was the best defensive forward in my era, and he just got entered into the Hockey Hall of Fame this past year. And Carbo, before that, when he played in junior, was a 140-point centerman or something like that. So he was a gifted offensive player that was turned into a defensive player.
Right.
So whenever we got the puck and we're playing against the team, you know, the best offensive line on the other team, and, you know, they're all three usually below the hash marks in the offensive zone. So when we got the puck, it was a 3-on-2 every time, or sometimes a 3-on-1. So
right.
we got lots of points, and I actually led the Montreal Canadiens in scoring in points 1 year, and the playing with Carbo.
I know you did, because you sent me all those game sheets that you took.
Oh, yeah.
From the files of things you did not know, and this really shows how old we're getting, things you did not know about hockey players when you bring up Guy Carboneau. His daughter is married to who, Russ?
Brendan Morrow. And
yeah. How yeah. old's that we're getting?
Huh? Yeah. And what a great family. I spend more time with them at Gosser than I do with Carbo. Carbo comes in once in a while.
Was he playing with Guy Carbo, or was Carbo a coach?
Yeah, I think they were playing, not together, but on the same team, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, how does that come around, Russ? So you and I are on the same team, and okay. I want to take a run at your daughter. That's, could you imagine that? How did that, that's the equivalent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gross, huh?
Well, it tells you how old Carbo got. Carbo played till he was 40, or so he must have played till he was 40.
Right. We'll have to get Brendan on and hear how that all came down.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Couple other things, Rusty. Dustin Byfuglien. First of all, you win 50 cases of White Claw, if you can spell Byfuglien. B-Y-F-U-G-L-I-E-N is Byfuglien, turns into Byfuglien. What was this whole story, Russ? Last year, he's with the Jets.
Yeah.
Training camp opens up, and I remember this, and the guy's a no-show.
Yeah, no-show.
And nobody knows what it is. Like, when people are waiting for, personal problems, injury, you know, someone died, or something like that, and it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, a week later, everyone, do you remember this? And everyone's going, uh-huh. What is going on here? And the guy never does play. There's a couple stories floating around that he was injured, and then people going, well, okay, injury's one thing, but is it something that's going to knock him out of the game for a year? And I remember saying, how is this prick getting away from it? And then today or this week, he got released.
$8.5 million a year, right? And I think he had 2 years left on his deal, so $17 million he walked away from. And I was talking to my son Lawton about it yesterday, because it's been in the news, and I just said, it's amazing. I wonder what's going on with this guy that he, you know, was able to just say, you know, the money's not that important. That's a freaking lot of money.
Yeah.
And athletes, we never get a chance to earn that money back. 1 year gone is 1 year done. You know, you're 1 year older, so you can't go back. Nobody can ever go backwards, but an accountant or a lawyer or somebody who can work till they're 65, they can probably earn that money back, because mm-hmm. they can work well into their later stages of the, you know, I'm trying to be nice here, but they can work a lot longer, I guess. And so an athlete, you know, you start, you see the clock starts ticking the day you sign your you know, you start playing in the NHL or any league, and you just can't get those, you can't get that time back. And so I'm just, you know.
You're staggered.
Yeah, and it's not always about money. Nothing's, you know, it's not, it shouldn't always be about money, but for an athlete, that's just, gosh, that's a lot of freaking dough to not come to camp and or I, you know, I just wish I knew the story, because it's very intriguing to me that, like, he didn't want that. He didn't want to get paid, basically. He didn't want to play.
Well, it begs the question, what would have to be so wrong?
Yeah.
So wrong, Russ, that you would turn down $17 million left on a contract? What would be so wrong?
Yeah, I mean, not...
Is he insane?
I'd wanted out of Montreal, right, when after that fourth year, and I asked to be traded and all that, and I've been through it. Mm-hmm. And so if he wanted out of Winnipeg, just let's just say he wasn't happy there, well, freaking go to camp and just say, I don't want to play here anymore. Trade me. Yeah. Please trade me. There's lots of players around the league that want to get traded, and some go to the coach or GM and say, you know what, I'm not happy here. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to work my ass off. But if you get a chance, I'd really like to move. And it happens in all sports. There's some places just don't. Their teams, coaches, management, players, there's the city, it's not always a perfect fit.
Well, you better do it privately, Russ, because you're going to get slayed publicly now.
Oh, yeah.
If you got that big dough and an owner signs you and believes in you and gives you a nice contract, 3, 4, or 5-year deal or something that, and then you come up and go, I want out of here. Fuck off.
Yeah, well, I know. I know that. But I just wonder what's going on. Hopefully he's okay, and hopefully everything in his life is fine. And you know what? If he just didn't want to play hockey and he was done, then good for him. And we all got to give him credit for leaving a shitload of money on the table, if that's the case, because it's a ton of cash.
Right. It's funny you bring this up, or I did bring this up, about the dough and what I think is first world problems, you know? That whether you sign Dustin Byfuglien or whether he wants to play or not, it's like, really? Really? Okay.
Well, especially with what we're going through right now. But
right.
This has been going on a lot longer than Corona.
But what's happening now is people have been locked down now for, let's say, I remember the first cancellation I made was like March 10th or something. So that's well over a month now that this thing's been going on. And with all the discussion about this talk about when sports is going to start up again, some of that I think is insensitive to other people who've been drastically affected by it. However, that's the way it is. People are talking about it. Hockey is not excluded from that talk now. A lot of people, Russ, there's a little movement here on Instagram where people who were previous fans and season ticket holders are buying tickets to games, spending sometimes upwards of probably $15,000 to buy a pair of tickets, are now saying they're not going to support hockey teams next year because of this cash crunch that everyone's experiencing now. People are losing jobs. Other people are spending money who do have it, supporting other people who don't. There's all kinds of examples of people parking their cash in support of other people, frontliners, and helping out all over the place. And it's not just one or two people. There's a bunch who are saying, I don't think they deserve it. You know, I don't think you got a league in hockey with a bunch of multi-millionaires all over the joint, owners making a boatload of cash, and I'm not going to do it. I'd far rather might want to spend my money for a more worthy cause. And what do you think's going to happen, Russ, with the fan when hockey does come up again? Are they going to pour back into the arenas? Or interesting story.
They're not going to leave the game because of what you just said. The game is going to be fine. It's just my biggest concern is that getting people, crowds back. You hear these, Alan Frew from Glass Tiger, every day he has a 1 hour Instagram live interaction, sings, and he tries to get another musician on every day, and they're scared about not being able to perform because that's how they make their money, is in front of audiences. And so there is always going to be fans. We used to have Dodger tickets, and my mother-in-law bought them in 82 or something, and we kept, and then when she passed away, they passed on to us, and we bought them every year until the price got to the point where I went, you know what, F this, and we punted. And then, you know what, when we punted, somebody bought those seats, and they're sitting in our seats. And then when they punt, there's going to be another four people sitting in those seats. So yeah, there'll be some follow, and hopefully not a lot, because if we don't get back to work sooner than later, a lot of things are going to fall by the wayside. And I just hope that we can get people back to a normal life again, because that means we have a vaccine. But for some people that are pissed off that they're having to pay a certain amount, yeah, we're always going to deal with that. And it doesn't matter what era sports was in, it happens. But, you know, during the Depression in the 30s, people still went to the plays and they still went to sporting events. And and it's going to happen. And the good news is, for people who don't want to go to the games anymore, they'll be able to watch them on TV.
Right. You know, I've always heard that you wonder how a team makes money when you hear these unbelievable skyrocketing franchise fees that you got to pay to buy a team. And someone told me, well, they don't buy it to make money every year. They buy it for the future potential of the next franchise fee. You know, do you think there's NHL teams, Russ, that are vulnerable to not playing hockey for a year, that it might, like, it would really hurt their business so well that... That, I don't know. Are all these teams going to be just fine?
I think there's more than just hockey teams, owners that are vulnerable. People who own restaurants and clothing stores, and everybody's vulnerable. If you shut your business down for months and maybe a year, I don't know how many people can hang on that long. I mean, you know, we always think, oh, these guys are billionaires and 100 millionaires and they can withstand, but they're they have bills to pay too. I've got a friend that is a large condo builder in Canada and the United States, and they have a huge rental portfolio of apartment buildings. All those people, if they don't pay, the owner of the building has to pay the bank,
right?
You know, they have not everybody has a free and clear title on their property. These poor restaurateurs that own all these places, if they don't own the building, they're paying somebody a lease. And if they own the building, they might be paying a mortgage. I mean, that's my thing about, you know, getting back to somewhat of a normal way of life here is, if we got hockey fans and sporting events going on with people sitting beside each other, we're in a really good place, because things are happening for us and we're protected and we can live our lives again. And it will happen. It's just, in my view, this has to happen sooner than later. The longer this goes on, the worse it is for everyone. And we need some luck, and we've got great people in both the United States and Canada that are working on this, and I'm cheering on the success of a vaccine or whatever to get us back to all the things we love.
Not to fearmonger, but someone says, well, how bad can it get? And the worst side of this can be is the world falls into a massive depression.
Yeah.
You know, that there could be this economic depression that let's hope not.
Well, and you've been going through that for the last 10 years, so you'll be able to tell everybody on the show what it's like.
Seagram's phoned me and said, don't quit, fuck, you're gonna kill us. The stock's gonna drop.
Everybody sold Seagram stock when you Oh, he's gonna quit. He's gonna quit. Rick, sell.
What will happen is there's going to be a lot of guys who are bulletproof, who've got a bunch of money.
Oh boy.
Who are going to sit in the weeds and snap up some businesses and sports teams that maybe guys the price is going to drop. So it'll be curious to see what happens down the road. Before we go, Rusty, expansion. Seattle's going to come in next year. I was talking to Stevie there, our editor, about expansion. When Ottawa came in, back in those days, you didn't want to be an expansion team. They automatically said, okay, you got a five-year build here.
My neighbor at Sherwood here owned part of the team.
Oh, okay.
Paul Anka.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Paul Anka, whose daughter is married to Jason Bateman. Everyone's watching Ozark these days.
Oh,
how about that for a little recall? Ottawa guy, Paul Anka, I lived just off Paul Anka Drive. When that team had to expand back in that day, it was going to be a shit show, which it was, right, for a long time. And then you whip the clock ahead to 2 years ago when Vegas expands and they go to the Stanley Cup Final. So Stevie gives me the rough details on expansion. You know, how it is now is you're going to lose one guy, right? You got 31 teams. You're going to lose one guy, which makes up a team. You can protect 8 skaters and a goalie as one option. The other option is 7 forwards, 3 defensemen and a goalie, and then there's a bunch of smaller shit. What do you think about expansion, Russ, and how should it work with this new team coming up?
I think they've got it. I think they're doing a good job. I think their teams are now paying $500 million, I think it is, for a franchise fee. And I think they did a great job in Vegas in trading and picking players that were available. And I think it's good that they're going to be solid out of the gate versus back when they started expanding. It was just years and years. It took 10 years to build a team, and I don't think that's fair to the owner, and I don't think that's fair to the fans. I mean, if you're losing one player per team, it shouldn't affect your organization.
I agree. My point was, I was gonna, should teams have to suffer for all these other teams? St. Louis playing their ass off for so many years, Toronto hasn't won a Stanley since 67. Is it unfair now that expansion comes along and it's way more favorable for teams to make the playoffs and be a contender in their very first year?
Yeah.
You say yes, it is fair.
Well, I think that,
I don't. If I haven't won a Stanley Cup in 50 years, I'm like...
Yeah, I mean, winning the first year is yeah. Probably not exactly what you want, but you know what, they got the best goalie available, and he played out of his mind, and team played great. Guys had career years, and
right,
there was guys on that team that were second, third line players on other teams. They weren't getting the chance they deserved. Mm-hmm. They go to Vegas, and now they're on the first line. They're on the power play or second power play, and they're showing everybody what they could have done if they were given the opportunity. It's not their fault. I think it was just great. I think it was great picking on Vegas's part of players.
Do you think, Russ, the commissioner's goal here is to keep growing the league with more teams?
That's a good question. I think they want to have strength in the league, and I think there's still a couple teams that struggle. But I think they would expand if they could. They get, the teams all make more money because they share that fee, and you open up new markets. I don't see why that the league shouldn't grow, but maybe expand more teams in the playoffs. If you're gonna have more teams, you should have more teams in the playoffs.
You think it'll ever go to Europe, Russ? Like, I thought that would be ridiculous. I've heard a couple of people now weigh in on that, that the NHL one day, especially with chartered flights and all that shit that teams use now, that it might expand into Europe.
I heard that back when I was playing, that they were going to expand into Europe, and I don't know. I just think the travel, oh boy, I mean, the travel would be brutal.
I think NFL teams could do it, but not basketball or hockey.
Yeah, because they play once a week, right? Hockey. Yeah. You'd have to go there and play for 2-3 weeks. You'd imagine the jet lag, both, and then the other team's coming back. I just don't know how that would work.
Right. We're out of time, Rusty. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Let's read some emails.
Why don't you finish us off with a joke?
Okay. I got a couple things. And follow us on Facebook, The Suspendables. The best one I heard, okay, joke, is a guy said, I'm now on day 38 lockdown with my wife. I can tell you this. I never want to fucking retire. To my buddy Jed, who I talked about at the beginning of the show, good luck, Jed. Love that guy. And one of his best moves ever, Russ, was we'd be playing golf, and just before we're walking into the clubhouse, okay, you'd have your clubs, he would throw a full glass of water on my crotch, so it looked like you pissed yourself walking through the... You probably did that move, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I did it in a restaurant in Victoria. I walked over to my brother and Jeff, and his buddy Sam Jackson was after the bar closed, and we're in this little diner. Actually, I think my brother owned part of it. It's called Overtime in Victoria, and they're sitting there, and I can't remember. I think Sam might have come over. I had a hole in my T-shirt, and he ripped my shirt. You know, remember when guys used to rip each other's T-shirt? Yeah. So I went over, I leaned on their table, I took his glass of water, and I poured it right in his crotch. And he's like looking at me like, what? He and my brother are like, what? Why is that funny? I go, when you go to leave, everyone's going to think you pissed yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
you shit
and
yourself.
Then they just start laughing their asses off. They thought it was great.
We got an email here, Russ. Someone wants to know, what did you do for summer jobs?
So I worked as a busboy in the Oak Bay Marina.
Way.
Yep, busboy, and they fired me for going to Okanagan hockey school, and that paid off. Hockey school,
smart move.
So that, and then you know, pretty much.
What are you, a wet brain? You can't remember your summer jobs?
I started playing pro hockey when I was 18, so.
Right.
You know, right. So I was a dishwasher, and then I was a busboy, and then I was a pro hockey player. How was
that? Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah. But here's the best summer job I ever had. When I played for the Leafs, Ward Air hired me.
I remember Ward Air. Yeah.
To go to their box at the Blue Jay games, and they gave me a parking pass where the players park, and I would show up with 20 pictures. And I would go into the box in the second inning, and I would sign autographs for whoever they invited to the box, and they would give me 2 first-class tickets anywhere in the world. So I'd go to, like...
You're just a fucking hog face,
man. Oh,
like,
I went to 10 games a summer. You know, God forbid I went to more.
Right.
And then Christmas, I'd be giving out first-class tickets to all my family. Like, they were...
Like every game, you got a pair.
I got 2 first class tickets for
each game you went to.
Each game I went to, Jesus. Anywhere in the world.
How did you screw that up?
Yeah. Oh my God! So, anyways, that was the best summer job. And then I would leave in the 7th inning, and so I wouldn't get stuck in the Toronto traffic. So that was the best summer job ever.
The best gig I've heard. Your old buddy there, Len Berry, when he bought Tampa. You know, he was going to turn this city upside down, you know, and it didn't work out. But I heard he hired a girl to, he had a bar, was part of the deal, I think, in the building, a restaurant bar that he owned. I always wanted this job, and her only job, and she got paid lots of money to do it, her only job was to make sure 30 girls were in that bar at the end of the every game. Fucking Len.
Jeez. Maybe.
You probably know more stories about Len than your that you want to mention.
Oh, yeah. I got a good one of him, and we went to a member guest in Carmel, yeah, at Clint Eastwood's golf course, and Tehima, it's called.
Let me get the name. Hang
on. Tehima. Tehema. Tehema.
Yeah.
And my friend obviously was a member. We flew down, and he came out of the shower. So he had two guests. So it was Len and I.
Yeah.
And then another member who we didn't know played with us. And,
right.
And it was just, it was freaking, it was so much fun. It was a shit show. We were drinking all day golf. And then Len came, and he lives on Ocean Drive, you know, in Carmel, Pebble Beach, my buddy.
Len does, or Clint Eastwood does?
No. So my friend, sorry, back up. My friend invites myself and Len down to the member guest at Tehema. So Len and I fly down, and we, on his private plane, and we go down there. We go to this golf tournament, and we're supposed to be getting ready to go for dinner. So we go to, you know, you go to your room, you shower, you come up, and we're having a glass of wine or champagne.
Right.
Len comes out of the shower, and his wife's there too, and my buddy's wife is there, and Paris is not. He comes out of the shower totally covered in soap, but he's butt naked. And they had a cat scratch pad, one of those trees with carpeted trees that you probably have in your house, and it's right in the front window along Ocean Drive or whatever that 17-mile drive is at Pebble Beach.
Like, wait a minute here. He walks out of the whole locker room? No.
We're at my fucking buddy's house, you idiot.
Oh, okay.
So we're staying at his house in Pebble Beach on 17-mile drive on the ocean, So we all go to our rooms, we shower to go out for dinner after golf. We've been drinking all day.
Yeah.
And so we come upstairs, and he's got the cat scratching pad. Len comes out of his bedroom covered in soap. He's lathered in soap, and he's got nothing on. He's butt naked. And he gets a glass of wine, and he crawls up, climbs up on the scratch pad, the tree, the cat thing. And people are walking by, looking, pointing up. Look at that. Is that a human being covered in soap, butt naked? Oh, my God. So my friend, Tommy Zena, is a great guy, big hockey fan. He owns the house. Right. And his wife, Nancy, I call her Nano. They're like, yeah, we're not going out for dinner. And we go, what do you guys want to order? So that ended the going out that night. But Len is he's a character, and a funny thing about Len is he wasn't a partier when he played. He didn't drink a lot. He started after his career, and
yeah, he went berserk after, right?
Yeah, he started having a lot of fun. But I was shocked when he told me, yeah, when I played, I didn't drink. Well, he was catching up after, but he's a funny guy. Obviously, that deal in Victoria didn't go his way, but he's I haven't talked to Len in probably 10 years, but
yeah,
his son's a hell of a hockey player.
Yeah, right. Son, and anyway, he made a bunch of money right in that real estate deal, and ended up buying the team, but it didn't work out. I'll tell you, I don't know how lucky I am, but I was drunk at when you talk about being at someone's house for Thanksgiving dinner. And I was fucking hammered with my brother, and it was a beautiful house, okay, gorgeous house. And we're sitting around the living room drinking rums, and they've got they've just got gorgeous shit from all around the world in their living room, okay, like statues and, you know, this piece of furniture from Italy. And you're just, you know, you go to this place going, what did this cost them, you know, this sort of stuff, uber rich people. And as a joke, we got up. It was time to go. My brother's like, get out of here, Jungle. I got to get you out of here, right? Because I was being stupid. And as a joke, I grabbed a television, okay? And said, thanks for having us, and we'll see you later. You know, and I pick up this TV. And my brother's like, put it down. Put that fucking thing down. I go, anyway, thanks a lot, Mr. and Mrs. Souza. This was great. And I slip.
Oh, okay, no. Russ? Oh, yes. No. Oh, no.
Yeah. Onto the middle of a glass coffee table. Yeah. With statues, Ladro statues flying everywhere. Oh. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I've seen that movie at our auction when you broke that piece of art that you were auctioning off.
Anyway, more and more stories. But Rusty, that's it for this week. Thanks everyone for tuning in. And we're going to be back next week with more stories and more talk. This was great. You can get a hold of us at the Suspendables at yahoo.com or look at our Facebook page. We've got more and more stuff going on there. Weigh in, comment. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk to everybody next week. Take it easy, Rusty.
All right, buddy. Take care.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.